Hello.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for coming. You know how when you go to a concert, they say, you know, recording of this is strictly prohibited. Well, that's not true here.
大家早上好。大家不知道有没有去一般听讲座的话都会事先说啊不允许录音啊不过在这里呢情况正好是相反的因为我们这里是录音的。
Okay. So, I've been working on a translation of Master Sheng Yan's book, Shifei Yao Wenrao, here it is in Chinese, and I've been working on it for the past several months. This book was published in 1998, and it's a compilation of articles that Shifu wrote for Commonwealth Magazine, right, in Taiwan. Shifu did not set out to write the articles as chapters in a book, but the editors of the magazine must have seen a natural connection that came together as a very helpful book.
所以在过去的几个月呢我一直在翻译圣严法师的一本书书名叫是非要温柔这本书是1998年由天下杂志出版社为师父出版的是编辑了收集了师父一系列的文章师父在发表每一期文章的时候可能并没有想到日后这些文章连起来会构成一本书但是可能是编辑看到了这本书的价值最后决定出一本书
So when I first encountered the book my working translation for it was right and wrong require a gentle approach and that's almost a literal translation I mean, I guess it's literally right wrongneeds warm and soft, very, very, very literally in Chinese. But then I decided that that wasn't such a snappy title, and I came up with Walk, Don't Rush to Judgment, because the Shifei in Chinese implies judging people. And I took two catchphrases in English, walk, don't run, and rush to judgment, and I combine them. So walk, don't rush to judgment.
所以在翻译这本书的过程当中呢，我一直在想这本书的书名应该怎么翻译才好。刚开始呢，我是想直译，就是直接从中文的是非要温柔直译成英文的话，英文是这样说。但是这样翻译听上去有些不是很自然所以后来我又想出了另外一个英文的翻译这边就是说慢慢走不要急于下结论这里也是怎么说在英语里边也是一语双关因为经常我们可以看到一些标志说慢慢走啊不要跑啊不要急啊所以在我看来中文当中说的是非要温柔是非是人做的一种判断一种批判过于快的下结论所以我觉得把它翻译成这本书的书名用英文翻译成慢慢走不要过于下结论可能更好
So I'd like to share some of the insights I've gotten from the book and perhaps some of the interesting cultural issues that presented themselves during translation Anyone who's been practicing Chan or Zen for a long periodwill have an idea of what he or she thinks the goal of practice is, seeing the nature, enlightenment, awakening. But most of us, ordinary sentient beings, as OSBs, right, deal with the world on a much more conventional basis. Our goals are less lofty. We have families. We need to eat. We have to support ourselves. We have to make a living.We have health issues and perhaps worries about politics and the environment. Enlightenment, especially our view of enlightenment, whatever that may be, seems to be very far away, or perhaps it is something so vague that is very foreign or hard to relate to. Sometimes we can't see out of our own glasses or the windshields of our cars when we're driving, let alone see right into our true nature.
在今天讲座中呢，我还会涉及到我在翻译这本书的过程当中所感觉到的不同的文化视角啊，这个我待会儿会提到。现在一般人在修行禅法的时候呢，只要修行了一段时间，都会大概的有一个目标，比如说要开悟啊，要见性啊，或者要有自己的修行啊。但是大部分的人呢，像大部分的众生，像我们这样活在这个世界上。会我们的目标可能没有那么高尚，因为可能要稍微更贴近生活一点，因为我们有家庭啊，我们需要吃饭啊，我们也要维持生计啊，我们要担忧自己的健康问题，还要担忧现在的政治环境，所以开悟这个目标，虽然听上去很好，但是离我们的生活好像有一点远。好像有一点模糊，感觉到很难直接跟自己的生活联系起来，更何况，大部分的时候呢，我们看这个世界，体验这个世界，都是从我们自己的视角出发的，很难跳出自己的有色眼镜，或者就像开汽车的时候，很难跳过这个车窗玻璃看世界一样，更不要说能够直接去看到我们的本性了。
So walk, don't rush, that's how I'm going to refer to the book, just for the sake of brevity, it is a book that approaches Chan from the point of view of ordinary life. There are no koans, extensive description of meditation techniques, or intense exegeses of sutras and commentaries. There is advice about living our lives on a day-to-day basis, illuminated with the light of Chan.Oftentimes, we Westerners believe consciously or unconsciously that our lives as we live them are not acceptable. There's something wrong with us, and Chan is the cure, although we're uncertain about what form that cure might take. And as a Dharma teacher, I'd like to help people in ways that are useful to them, not make them wear the shoes that fit me, to use one of Sherfu's expressions. Thus, a different wayof looking at practice is welcome.
所以这本书我将称之为慢慢走不要跑，不要过于下结论，过早下结论。这本书呢，它在书中师父没有很多提到很多稀奇古怪的公案，没有大量的经论教理，它更多的是关系到我们日常生活当中的直接的佛法的运用。就像我们西方人看生活，总觉得生活好像有一些出了一些问题，需要找到解决的方法，而佛法呢，就是能够提供一个解决的方案。
I have read most of
let me finish that one. 然后就像所以在这本书当中呢，师父就是说我是想要帮助别人，提供他们需要的东西，而不是说让大家来穿我最适合穿的鞋子，就不要，还是要从大众的公众的需求出发，就是师父会这样说，这是如何看修行的一种方法。
Okay, I have read most of Sherfu's books in English, and they almost always have some aspect of Buddhism as the central topic. However, in Walk, Don't Rush, it's the ordinary, seemingly non-Buddhist world that is front and center. You will not find explicit advice on how to run a business, dealing with your boss, or a pain in the neck coworker in Faith and Mind or The Infinite Mirror.
So, 这本书我称之为慢慢走不要过早下结论，这本书呢，它对禅的解释更是从日常生活中的角度来出发的。所以在我读过师父很多英文著作，通常来说 总是会有一个中心的话题，然而在这本书当中呢，似乎没有一个没有一个很中心的佛教的话题，更多的是我们日常生活。日常生活当然你不会从这本书当中找到师父建议你应该怎么经营商业，怎么经营你的事业，但是呢它也并不像一般的比如说性心明啊、宝镜无尽之类这样直接是教理方面的书。
Okay, as I began reading and translating Walk Don't Rush, I saw that it was a book written by a Chinese Buddhist directly to an audience of Chinese lay Buddhists in Taiwan. So there were many linguistic and cultural hurdles to overcome. On the other hand, the book covers universal concerns that we all share, from eating and relating to friends and family to dealing with the stress and challenges of the workplace.
所以当我开始阅读和翻译这本书的时候呢，你可以理解为它是一个这是一本有佛教徒写的，有像师父这样佛法大师写给台湾的修行的在家人的一本书，所以它有台湾这样一个社会地理的自身的特点。但是师父在谈这本书的时候也谈到了很多一般在家人不管是在台湾还是在美国都会遇到的日常生活中的一些问题，怎么样面对这些工作当中的挑战和压力，所以从这个角度讲它又是普世性的。
So my first thought about the book was that it was a sort of Buddhist self-help or personal development book. Actually I was talking to Min just before the talk and she mentioned chicken soup of the soul. So I guess we'd have to translate that as tofu soup of the true mind or something. And you can find oodles of books like this in bookstores today. But just because Sherfu is giving straightforward, useful advice doesn't mean that this is simply a book of homilies and simple remedies that only touch the surface of our problems. Sherfu is not delving into deep discussions of practice in Buddhist teaching per se, but he does emphasize a number of profound principles like emptiness, impermanence, and not-self.Specialized Buddhist books that speak about advanced method and deep states of mind are very important. The problem is that many people will never read them. And here is a book that I believe anyone can relate to.
所以我刚接触师父这本书的时候，刚看的时候，我的印象觉得这更像一本佛教徒的自助书籍，或者是自我人生发展的书籍。就像我刚刚在跟翻译讨论的时候说，翻译提到这本书有点像心灵鸡汤，就像那佛法的心灵鸡汤之类的书。而现今你在书店里可以找到很多这样类似的书。但是这本书虽然师父是在给你非常具体的生活上的有用的直接的指导，但并不意味着这本书就是像那些人生自救书一样是一个提供一个很简单的解决方案，好像只碰触了我们生活表层的问题。实际上虽然这本书师父没有直接提出很深的佛法的概念啊，佛法的经论啊，没有进行很深入的讨论，对佛法没有直接进行很深入的讨论，但是他还是运用了佛法的一些基本上的很深刻的观念，比如空性啊、无常啊、无我啊，虽然这些观念他没有进行直接讨论，但是他所给出的贴近生活的建议都是基于这些原理的。
The first part of the book, which is what I will talk about today, is concerned with reason and emotion, especially as these attributes play out in the workplace. So Sherfu introduces this section by saying, emotion must reason. Emotion must have reason supporting it. And then, so now I'll be reading actually Sherfu's words in my translation. So Sherfu writes, when reason takes the lead, we must use emotion to accompany it. When emotions are too strong, then we must use reason to clear the way. If only we can do this, then the world will become welcoming and harmonious.
所以我今天要介绍的呢，我今天要介绍是师父这本书的第一篇， 这第一篇主要是处理理性和感性的问题的，特别是运用理性和感性处理工作中遇到的问题。师父是这样描述第一篇的，第一篇的篇题标题叫多情需讲理。接下来 Harry 所讲的是他自己将这本中文书翻译成英文的部分，然后我读的是中文的原文部分。原文师父是这样说的，当理性抬头时需要用感性来配合，感性太强时又需要用理性加以疏导，若能如此，世界才有温馨和祥和。
The interplay of reason and emotion is central to many problems in the world today. We in the West tend to take a Cartesian view of these things and think that they, as well as the dichotomies of body and mind are separate. We divide things into categories all the time. But contemporary neuroscience shows that no matter how cerebral a problem is,or how visceral a situation is, both reason and emotion are always present. So Sherfu points out most importantly that we should be aware of the presence and interplay of these two qualities of mind.
其实感性和理性的交流互动呢，在我们今天这个世界上也是解决很多问题的关键所在。但是我们西方人呢一直受卡迪尔两分法影响比较大，我们一般会把身体和身心分开，身是身心是心，然后很多东西呢又喜欢把它分门别类的放入一个个格子当中。实际上现代脑神经学已经证明，不管是从哪个角度来看，其实身心都是没有办法分开的，它都是一直在互动当中，相互影响的。就所以师父就指出非常重要，很指出非常重要的一点，就是我们时刻要意识到身心同时存在，并且身心是如何相互影响。
Most of us have heard of fake news and how this phenomenon has grabbed public consciousness. At the bottom, this is caused by people either wanting to hear facts that don't exist.Or wanting to ignore facts that do exist.
我们大部分人肯定听说过虚假的假新闻，关于假新闻的事情，并且这个现象怎么样的揪起了公众良心，让大家引起了很多的争议。实际上假新闻这个事情还有这个现象的本身，其实只是是怎么造成的呢？其实是由于有些人不想，他是不想听到一些事实，因为他可能有固定自己的想法，他只想听到迎合他自己心理或者想法的事实，所以他会对不存在的假事实呢很感兴趣，而对真实存在事实呢却置之不理。
This is a perfect example of reason and emotion getting mixed up. So Sherfu writes.Given the general air of anxiety, people can't help worrying all the time. They worry about themselves and they worry about other people. This psychological angst is a function of unregulated reason and emotion. Pure, nascent reason will cause people to turn away from the world. Pure emotion, untempered by reason, will cause people to be overwhelmed by the world.If you operate entirely according to reason, showing no mercy when others are in error, and you hound other people every step of the way, then the world is going to turn away from you, meaning nobody likes a cold, heartless logician. But if you operate entirely from emotion, you run the risk of being muddle-headed, a blockhead. And although you might sympathize with other people,It will not be because of any rational love of humankind. Love devoid of reason and understanding tends to devolve into something that is possessive and controlling, and can end up giving other people less freedom, not more. And this is like a bleeding heart person who is not really thinking about what they're trying to accomplish. They're just overcome with pity.in a given situation.
所以刚刚我提到假新闻这种现象，而假新闻盛行这种现象，就是将感性和理性混淆的一个很好的例子。在师父的书中，师父提到，像这样的社会，这样的处境，使得人们无时无刻不处身在紧张之中，担心着自己，也担心他人。精神紧张的主要原因，不外乎是感性与理性的不调。纯粹的理性会使人被现实的世界拒绝，纯粹的感性又会使人被现实的世界淹没。如果时时处处讲理，又得理不饶人，步步紧逼人，当然会被拒绝。经常情绪化的人必然糊涂，虽然能同情人，不过是站在自以为是的立场和观点，而不是以他人的角度来爱人。这种缺少理性的爱，可能会演变成占有、控制又否定他人的自由空间。
So how can you reconcile emotion and reason? Either extreme of rationality or emotionality can lead us to calamity or perplexity. We need to use both our reason and our feelings to face reality and deal with it. But first we have to fine-tune and reconcile them. Only when that has been done can we transcend them both and use them with ease. How can we accomplish this? First, we must observe that our emotions arise and disappear with no fixed pattern. Once again, impermanence is always operative. We must see how we are filled with the resentment of injustices inflicted upon us, and that often our body and mind are filled with tension. When we cannot coherently speak of our situation and our feelings are stirred up beyond our control, we must endeavor to get a clear understanding of what is going on in our mind. It is at this moment when these difficult feelings make themselves known that we must make our best efforts to control them. This is when disputes with other people can easily arise. And once again, just to show how this is not just a self-help book, what Shirfu, I think, is really talking about here is in the links of dependent origination, the separation between desire and attachment, between being reactive and responsive. This is what Shirfu is really talking about here, being aware of how our minds operate.
那么感性和理性应该如何调和呢？师父在书中写道，虽然理性和感性的极端会导致祸害和困扰，但是我们必须承认并接受事实，而且要先从如何调和理性和感性的问题上着手，其次是超越理性和感性，最后便可自如地运用理性和感性。如何调和理性和感性呢？首先，当我们觉察到自己的情绪起伏不定，满腔的愤怒不平，身心紧张，语无伦次，情绪激动，难以控制的时候，内心要清楚明白，这是感性急于抬头和力求表现的时刻，也是容易跟别人起争执的先兆。在这里呢，我想提到的特别指出的是，师父的书有别于一般比较浅显的人生自助书的地方，就在于写这段话的背后，师父其实运用到了十二因缘，因缘这个教理，讲到了一般人们的抓取和一般人的攀缘心。比如说在这里，如何对现象进行反应的时候，师父提到了内心要清楚明白，这是一种自己的觉照。
So then the question arises, if reason and emotion are not particularly trustworthy, upon what understanding should we act and make our decisions? So in the last chapter of this section, Shirfu talks about making policy decisions, and he's talking about, you know, if you're running a company, really, rely on dharma, not people. So then he says, what is dharma? Dharma is that which is the same from ancient times to the present, and comprises the principles and concepts that pervade the universe. So it's nothing that Shirfu or anyone else made up, right? It extends equally throughout the world. It is an internal, unchanging truth. And there are two kinds of dharma, mother and child. Mother-child dharma is the foundational principles upon which all philosophy and rationality and principles and postulates revolve. And child dharma is based upon these principles and comprises the guidelines through which these principles are set in motion and executed. So just about that.
Yeah. 所以问题就来了，既然感性和理性都不是很靠得住的因素，那么我们平时应该怎么样做决定呢？我们应该怎么理解去指导我们的行为呢？在书中的最后一章，师父提到了这一点，他说做决策依法不依人，就相当于好比运营一个公司一样，你怎么样依靠什么样的因素你可以做这样的决定呢？ 法是什么呢？师父在书中提到，法是一种同于古今、同于天下的原则和理念。它生出四海的这个法不是师父自己创造的。法有母法和子法两种。母法是基本原则，是团体的理念和方针。子法是一种执行的政策，是以基本原则为归依的。基本原则是不能改变的，而执行的政策。 只要在不违背基本原则的前提下，可以因时、因人、因事、因地、因物而稍加变通。
So mother and child dharma, what that really amounts to is the two truths, right, of the relative and the absolute. This is how we see the world and how the world actually is. And once again, Sherpa was showing that there is this big picture, the complete story and tenor of our lives in as we move throughout the universe in space and time, and then there is just our everyday activities, you know, trying to get a very clear perspective. So we generally are locked into our own views, but with Buddha Dharma, we can see beyond our normal way of perceiving and deal more lucidly with the world.
所以师父这里提到的母法和子法，实际上指出了两个真理，就是相对事物的相对性和绝对性。师父为我们展示了一个大的方向，人生的大的方向，并为我们在这个过生活的时候，穿越时空穿梭的时候呢，提供了一些指导。因为我们一般人看世界都是凭着我们已经形成的一些固有的偏见和 想法去看这个已经锁定的这样一种固有的偏见去看世界的，但是由于我们学习了佛法，我们就可以超越我们一般带有偏见的去看世界的这样一种方式，而能够看到一个相对真实一点的世界。So
once you understand that Dharma underpins all of what Sherpa is pointing out, then you can see how his observations and recommendations flow. Sherpa's message is that we are all in the same boat, and therefore we should respect and care for one another. This is true at all times, especially when it doesn't feel like it's true.
所以只有当你看到师父所写的这本书上的文字，它背后所有支持的佛法的教理之后呢，你就可以比较清晰的。 理解到师父他的观察和他的建议是怎么样的操作的。师父的基本信息呢，就是说我们其实所有的人都是在同一条船上，所以我们应该相互的尊敬、相互照顾。这句话是一直是很正确的，也很真实，但是有时候呢，好像感觉上不是这样。Okay,
now that we have seen some of the general issues that underlie living in the world, let's talk about some real problems. Let's say you own a business and you are upset by the competition. Sherpa proclaims that your competitor is not your enemy. How can that be? The person competing with you may take all of your business away, hurt your pride, stifle your success. But by using Dharma as his basis, Sherpa points out the competitors are aids to your personal development. And I guess you could extend this to anyone who's giving you a hard time. They compete with you because you were doing well. So that is a good sign. If indeed they are more successful than you, then you are compelled to find your own path. You accept reality as it is and you move accordingly. And I just listened to a quiz show that had Neil deGrasse Tyson on, the famous scientist. And he had to answer three sort of simple questions about which he knew nothing. And he got two of them wrong. And so someone asked him, he said, well, don't you feel bad that you answered these questions improperly? And he said, no, because now I've learned two things that I didn't know before. So that's the attitude that Sherpa was talking about.
刚刚我们谈的都是一些泛泛而谈的智慧，接下来我会具体的举例讲一些。比如说师父在书中提到，就拿做生意来举例吧。师父声称你的竞争对手并不是你的敌人，但是这怎么可能呢？因为你的竞争对手抢走了你的生意，伤害了你的自尊心，又让你成为你成功的阻碍，为什么他们不是我的敌人呢？师父用佛法作为基础是这样解释的。师父指出，竞争者，你的竞争对手其实是你个人成长的很好的助手。其实这个道理我觉得不仅仅适用于竞争对手，适用于所有让你感觉不舒服的人。因为当他们与你竞争的时候，就是因为你做得很好，所以这其实是一个很好的兆头，说明你做得好，人家才会来跟你竞争。而且如果你的竞争对手越成功的话呢，你也会因此而受到激励，也会被迫呢做得更好，或者说找出你自己的道路。你会接受现实，并且不停地向前来发展。我正好听到一个电台节目，有一个科学家，他的电台上要答三个问题，结果他错了两道题目，所以主持人就问他，你有没有感到很沮丧，答三道题你错了两道，他说没有啊，他说我觉得我今天学到了两道题的内容，挺好的。师父这里所谈的就是这种态度。
So having a mind of gain and loss, success or failure is the problem. That doesn't mean that we don't do anything. It has to do with how we're attached to things.So we have no control over what we encounter, and we cannot have total control over the outcome of our actions. The only thing that we can do is respond reasonably and responsibly in a given situation. Acting that way is in itself achieving a goal. Indeed, Sherpa notes that civilization develops according to the laws of supply and demand, but he says,My task is to explain principles and values and help people to achieve clarity about where they're going. Sharing my understanding with others, that's all. I've spoken about the concepts and belief that promote spiritual environmental protection and a pure land on earth. So Sherpa is talking about his vision of a peaceful and harmonious world.
So 有一颗得失心，那么如果有一颗得失心，那失败和成功就会是一个问题。但是我们一般对于我们能够遇到的，所以生活中所遇到的，或者是对我们行为的一些结果，并没有完全的掌控。所以唯一的事情，唯一能够在我们掌控之中的，就是对发生的事情，对一些情景做出有责任心的适当的回应。而这种回应本身，其实也就是一个目标。当然，确实师父在讲到我们这个文明不停地向前发展，也是受到供需法则的影响的。但是他解释到，我的任务呢，师父本人的任务就是将他的理念和方向与大家分享出去，帮大家搞清楚人生的目标。比如说师父经常提到的和推广的理念，就是心灵环保和人间净土，这些是师父本人的理念，他对一个平和繁荣世界的理念。
So with this kind of clarity, Sherpa can distinguish between what it means for a business owner or an employee for that matter to be greedy as opposed to being enterprising. He notes that greed is often the force that drives social progressand increases prosperity. How many Buddhist teachers do you know who would make an observation like that, that greed has its uses? And of course, it's very important to note that Sherpa is starting with greed. That's certainly not where he's ending up. So, however, he quickly notes that greed can turn into something that is wasteful and harmful, and that has to be taken care of. So out of greed, Sherpa distills enterprising, which is creating wealth and prosperity with others in mind, so that we give back a little of all we've been entitled to. We should, of course, be ever vigilant about the arising of greed in our minds, because that can be harmful to ourselves, others, and society at large. Work that is positive, helpful, and life-enhancing is always to be encouraged.
所以很清楚了这个理念之后呢，师父就可以就可以区分什么是进取心，什么是贪婪心。他提到，其实贪婪心也是社会进步的一种，也是社会进步促使社会进步和社会繁荣的一种动力。你看有多少佛教的老师或者佛教大德能够意识到这一点，或者是做出这样一种观察，但师父确实能够意识到贪婪本身是有一定的作用的。他是从贪婪开始谈起，当然并不是止于贪婪本身，因为他又迅速地指出，贪婪如果运用的不好，当然是有他自己负面效应，比如说他会很浪费资源，又很伤害别人。所以这种但是从贪婪本身当中，这个概念本身当中，师父又提取出了进取心这一点，就是贪婪的一个方面，好的一个方面。因为有了进取心，进取心是什么呢？就是在创造财富和促使社会繁荣的同时，又不伤害他人，有他人在心中的这样，有他人在心中，并且积极的给予反馈社会这样一种心态在里边。所以，当然我们在这个过程当中也要时刻警觉贪婪心它的负面的那一块有没有在我们的心中产生，因为负面的贪婪心是可以对自己、对他人、对于社会都造成伤害的。但是如果工作是一种积极的态度，是有用的工作，而且能够不断地增进我们生活的，让我们生活更加美好，那永远是值得鼓励的。
And from here, Sherpa strikes a theme that is ever present in the book.We all live together on a very small island, this little earth, this little planet. We are all in the same boat. How unfortunate if we're constantly at each other's throats. We embark on this little boat and we sail forth into the ocean. We're all simply trying to make a living and find what we need to live. We must understand that people in the same boat help one another.This may sound like a simple homily or maxim, but it is informed by the deepest of Buddhist principles that we inter are, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, and as it says in the Avatamsaka Sutra, Shur Shur Wuai, all things are interfused and with no obstructions.
所以在这里师父指出了贯穿整个一本书的一个主题，那就是我们所有的人其实就像是生活在同一个小小的海岛上，我们其实是坐在一条船上，在这条小船上，如果不停的你争我夺，其实是非常糟糕的，因为我们都需要开这艘船到海洋上去谋生，都需要过日子，最重要的其实是有一颗同舟共济的心，这听上去好像好像像一句没有什么带有感情色彩格言，但是实际上它背后是有非常深刻的佛教教理支持的。就像一行禅师在华严经的讲座当中指出，所谓世事无碍，所有的事情所有的万事万物都是相互影响、相互交流，又并不会相互阻碍的。
So Sherpa was taking these profound teachings and showing their practical application. When you come down to it, we're really just like goldfish in the same bowl. If there's a fish in the bowl that sees all the other fish as hateful, and he tries to dump on all the others, that was Dabian in Chinese, It's going to end up muddying the water for everyone until life becomes unbearable. Won't that fish end up becoming a victim too? Since we're all in the same bowl, we should have some feeling of community spirit. This is something that is sorely lacking today. If we can develop some empathy for everyone around us, the effects will be contagious. Family members will be mutually supportive and respectful. Each company will provide a variety of career paths so everyone has the possibility of making a living. This is the way to make a real improvement in our lives.
所以大家可以看得出来，师父就是将这些非常深奥的佛法的教理，把它运用到人们的现实生活当中。就好比如果鱼缸里有一条鱼，认为其他鱼都很可恶，故意到处大便，把水弄得浑浊不堪，最后自己不也是受害者吗？既然是同在一个缸里，就要有共同体的情感，这也是我们现在比较少的。如果大家生活在台湾，都能有这样一份同理心，家庭里的成员相互帮助，相互礼让，公司和公司之间相互给对方一条路走，让大家都有饭吃，我们的生活环境一定会更好。
Consideration and empathy are in short supply in the world today. Think about it. Everyone has hopes and dreams, and what benefits you may also benefit me. If I give you the space to grow and prosper, then I too can grow and prosper. If my growth and prosperity come quickly, then I can turn around and help along those who are trailing behind. This problem of empathy, or the lack of it, can also be viewed as the problem of how difficult it is for us to maintain good communication with each other. That's really a problem today. We need to broaden our views and expand our concept of empathy to include every member of society. When that comes to pass, we won't be confined to thinking only in terms of my business or my career.
所以师父在书中写道，今天这个时代就是缺少了一点为别人设想的同理心。这就是说，当你了解到大家都有这样共同的期望，对你有利的事对我也有利，让你成长的也可以让我成长，甚至我成长快的时候还能带着成长比较慢的人一起进步。现在我们所说的同理心多半还是局限在人际关系的沟通，实际上同理心的概念可以扩展到整个国家社会的层面，而不只是我的公司我的事业而已。在这里讲到同理心的问题和缺失的时候呢，师父指出了一般人是很难维持一个非常良好的有效的沟通，在我看来这是也的确是一个很成问题的地方。
So now, attachment versus willingness to give. In other words, holding on to something or the ability to let it go. Let's discuss the differences between attachment and a willingness to give to others. We have a tendency to become preoccupied with making money, clinging to what we've made, and we become mired in attachment. However, when our concern lies with the needs of others and we contribute to society as a whole, we show a willingness to give that indicates that we have willpower, a very different thing from attachment. When we suffer from too much attachment, we're concerned with ourselves, with our own fame and power, clinging to what we have and begrudging it to others. It's always about our own problems, paranoia, and preoccupation with the past and the future. Attachment means there is an endless engagement with your own suffering and not that of others.
所以这里我们来谈一下执着和舍得之间的区别。我们有一种倾向性啊，就是说我们总是不停的围绕着要赚更多的钱呀，要紧紧的抓住我们现在已经获得的并且对我们已经拥有东西产生很深的执着心。这是我们的一种倾向性。然而当我们的如果当我们意识到我们关系的东西和其他人的需要和我们回馈向社会的回馈其实都是紧紧联系在一起，是一个整体的时候呢，我们就会愿意去付出，愿意去舍得去给别人。 这个时候我们就会有一种意志力，这种意志力就跟刚刚的执着心很不一样。当我们因为有太强的执着心而遭受很多痛苦的时候，当我们整天只关心我们自己，关心我们的名利，紧紧地抓住我们所拥有的东西，而又向别人抱怨的时候，我们总是会说啊，这是总是会关注这是我的问题啊，我的过去，我的未来，我现在所面临的问题。而执着心就意味着我们不停地跟自我在进行这样一种对话，不停地关注自我所现在所承受的痛苦，而不是其他人的痛苦。
So with the understanding that we are all in the same boat, the perspective of how we deal with the world changes. Add to this that we are very small in a vast universe and change is always with us. So with that viewpoint, success is nothing to brag about. Failure is nothing to fear. Success is a chance to help others. Failure is a chance to learn. If you are the owner of a company, a boss, or a manager, your responsibility is to help the people who work for you. You treat them like brothers and sisters, not underlings. Scherfer goes into great detail about how you hire people, what qualities you're looking for, and what to avoid. He talks about promoting people in the best way and how to avoid the jealousy of others if you are promoted, and how to deal with a situation when you'd like to be promoted but you're passed over.
所以当我们意识到我们都是在同一条船上的时候，我们的视角，我们处理事情和看待世界的视角就会发生变化。成功也就没有什么好值得炫耀的了，失败也没有什么好害怕的，因为成功对你来说只是一个可以帮助别人的机会，而失败也不过是一个可以继续再学习的机会。如果你是一个如果你拥有一家公司，或者是一个老板，或者是一个经理，那么你的职责就是去帮助那些为你工作的人。你对待他们就要像对待自己的兄弟姐妹一样，而不是你的下属。师傅在书中很详细的提到了，当你雇佣别人的时候，你应该寻找哪些品质，并且当你想提升。你想提拔某个人的时候，怎么样可以最好的提拔这个人，又避免其他人的嫉妒？师父提到了，很多，还提到了，如果当你应该轮到是你被提拔的机会，但是你没有被提拔的时候，你应该怎么处理等等情况。
So Scherfu writes, "The world we live in today seems like a disaster scene. We don't want to get lost in imagining."What a peaceful and ideal society might look like. That would be living in a dream that really can't exist. I have been to many parts of the world, and even societies with the best social welfare and the most flourishing economies face the problems we face in Taiwan. There is no place free of crime and natural disasters. Let's be clear about this. The world is really not safe and secure.Just clearly recognize this fact, and then you can act accordingly, and then there can be genuine safety and security. Otherwise, you'll be living in a daydream. And what Scherfu is saying here is that our minds, our perception can be safe and secure, even if the world isn't.
所以师父在书中提到，其实我们所处的社会就好像是火灾的现场。不要想象这个世界是多么的安定，多么的理想，那其实都是幻想、梦境。实际上，我们不可能拥有那样的社会。我到过世界很多地方，即使是住在社会福利最好、经济最繁荣的地方，也都面临和台湾一样的问题。没有一个地方不犯罪，也没有一个地方没有天然灾害。所以我们一定要看清楚，世界本来就是不安定的，只有认清这个事实。我们才能拥有真正的安定，否则只是不切实际的空想。在这里，师父书当中所提到的安定，真正的安定，只是指我们心的安定。
As always, Sherfu points out the middle way so that we don't fall into disillusionment or get wildly swayed by our expectations. Once people get a clear picture that the world is not so good and beautiful, they can, unfortunately, develop a very negative attitude. It is really a matter of chance whether an individual will suffer due to things like bank failures, kidnappings for ransom, and gun battles erupting on the streets. Such events do not happen to everyone. Right? We are often paranoid and we think it's going to happen all the time, but Sherpa points out they don't happen to everyone, nor do they occur every day in every place. If we can only be vigilant in peacetime and be mindful of the presence of danger and disorder and proceed earnestly and wholeheartedly, then the brightness will be greater than the darkness, safety greater than danger. So it is best to look at the brighter side. As I always say, if the mountain won't turn, the road can turn. And if the road can't turn, then you can turn. In other words, you're always adapting to circumstances. You're always going to plan B. So if there seems to be no road ahead and nothing but a steep cliff in front of you, then you can turn your head and gaze back. The road is still there. Even if your body can't move, your mind can, and your perceptions can change. Everyone hopes for bright flowers to appear on a dark willow tree. Well, yeah, he's always talking about it in a variety of ways. All right. Bill was talking about the idea of karma or do you want to?
I just wonder in this book whether Shifu ever talks about karma. You know, Harry just used an example. Some people, well, the example I used, some people, because they got to work on time on 9/11, died. And other people who were late didn't die, right? Now, how do we explain that kind of thing? What is it about this world that we all live in that allows that kind of thing to happen? And I'm just saying the traditional Buddhist view, I think everybody will agree, is that it's the law of karma at work, right? You know, that's traditional Buddhism, okay? Now, maybe Shifu in this book doesn't want to talk about that kind of issue in terms of karma, you know, because, maybe he doesn't want to get that deep into the tradition, okay? But I was just asking Harry, does he ever talk about that in this book?
Yeah, well, no, it's a good question. It's always in the background. I mean, he is talking about causes and conditions and people in different situations and a variety of different situations people are in. I don't know that he's actually just presenting the doctrine of karma in that way. It's kind of a given in the book in that, you know, you're dealing with life and life is difficult. I mean, it's, once again, this is a book that's written in a more general way of like normal narratives, not doctrine per se.
所以我先把Harry 刚刚说的那一段讲完，讲完之后Bill 菩萨问了一个问题，然后 Harry 回答了这个问题。刚刚我继续翻译下去。但师父在书中继续提到，但有的人，我们刚不是说师父在书中提到这个世界像火灾现场嘛，并不安定。然后师父继续在书中写道，但有的人在认清世界是不美好的事实后呢，就开始变得很消极。其实这是一个豁然率的问题，比如绑票、撕票、银行倒闭、街头抢劫这类的事情，并不是每个人都会遇到的，也不是每天每个地方都在发生的。只要我们能够居安思危、临危不乱、脚踏实地地往前走，光明还是多于黑暗，安全还是多于危险，所以我们应该多往好的方向看。就像我们常说的，山不转路会转，路不转人可以转。如果连路都没有了，眼前就是悬崖峭壁，你回个头往回看，还是会有一条路。 所以人不转心可以转，观念也可以转，人人都希望能够柳暗花明。可是到了绝境的时候，往往根本没有柳暗花明在等着你，你只能靠观念的转变。观念的转变有时候是可以扭转乾坤的。然后比丘菩萨就问了一个问题，说在这本书当中，他很好奇师父有没有提到业力，因为业力对具体的人、具体的事情、具体情况都会有影响啊、比如说在911的时候，及时上班、按时上班的人遭到了厄运，死在了这场灾难当中，但是上班迟到的人却躲过一劫。传统佛教呢会提到，会对这样现象这样解释了、说这是其实是业力运作的结果。所以标菩萨很好奇，不知道师父有没有对这样的情况做出解释，有没有提到在书中。然后 Harry 菩萨回应说，这个主题业力这个教理始终是贯穿全文，贯穿师父的解答问答当中的，因为这是一个佛教基本原理。但是师父没有具体的正面的直接的描述业力的原理在书中，因为这还是一本怎么说，是一本运用佛教原理来具体指导我们人生的一本有些人生自助类一样性质的书。当然师父总体的意思是说，人生是不易的，人生有很多的艰难之处，但是我们必须要正面的面对它和处理它。
Okay, if you remember, I was talking about bright flowers appearing on a dark willow tree, and that's a Chinese expression that means unforeseen opportunities will emerge in the midst of a totally impossible situation. Like I close my eyes and I open my hand, and a winning lottery ticket is going to float into my hand. Nope, not this time. Maybe better luck next time. So when you are at the end of your tether, there are really rarely such bright flowers appearing. So that's the time, the only thing you can depend on is a change in your attitude and perception towards whatever you are facing. Sometimes that moment when attitude and perception change is the moment when things really begin to turn around. And then Shurfu then stresses how a clear assessment of how you are reacting to the world. You really have to know what's going on in your mind.
所以刚刚我提到师父书中讲到人人都希望能够柳暗花明，这里柳暗花明的中文的意思就是说希望能够在不可能的情况下突然出现奇迹，出现一些很好的事情，好比你一睁开眼你中了彩票之类的。当然这些事情是很少出现的，所以唯一能靠得住的就是改变你自己的态度，改变你的观念，观念的改变是有可能有可能的，也是有帮助的。但是在这能够做到转变观念这一点，你需要有非常清醒、非常非常清楚的身心状况。
So the degree to which you are invested in a situation makes all the difference in your point of view. So now we're going to get a little romantic. Let's say there is someone that you are dying to marry. You've reached a point where it's him or her or nothing. Before you know it, you might find yourself in a tragedy right out of Romeo and Juliet. For the characters in that play, theirs is a doomed love affair. Once the causes and consequences are set in motion, their relationship is bound to end in tragedy. A little karma for you. However, we who watch the play can recognize it as just a beautiful work of art, as just a play, and take a more objective point of view, questioning whether we really need to be trapped in a situation like these doomed lovers. So, and once again, another comment about karma in a way. I believe, Shurfu writes, that everything happens when all the causes and conditions are in place. These causes and conditions are not subjective superstitions, but the objective elements of the situation. And if they don't allow you to attain your goals, then perhaps it is time to take a step back from the situation and think it over. We don't have to be prisoner of our views. So on one hand, maybe the cause is not right. But on the other hand, something else may unexpectedly come to fruition. A seeming setback may be a blessing in disguise. The person on the losing side may later turn out to be the winner. Such are the variations in causes and conditions. If you can truly alter your perceptions, then you can remain ever hopeful and see that there is nothing to be pessimistic about.
接下来师父在书中提到这里我们会讲到一些浪漫的东西，比如你非要跟某人结婚不可，到了非君莫娶、非亲不嫁的程度，最后变成了罗密欧与朱丽叶一样，悲剧就发生了。罗密欧朱丽叶的故事当然是很美的，可是那是从欣赏悲剧艺术的角度来出发的，当事人可不会觉得美，对他们来说那就是死路一条，是非常痛苦的。所以此时是不是应该转个念头，想一想为什么非这样不可呢？我有个观念，凡事都要靠缘的成就。所谓的因缘并不是迷信，而是指客观的环境的自然因素。要是这种因素都不允许你完成某项目标，也许就该退一步想想了，在某方面的因或许不成熟，在其他方面却可能别有收获。这就是塞翁失马，焉知非福，失之东隅，收之桑榆，这其实都是因缘的变化。只要观念能够转变，永远都有希望，没什么好悲观的。
Okay, so that in a sense that concludes the message of my talk. For the remainder of the time, I want to talk about some of the things that were going on in this translation culturally and linguistically. Yeah, Bob? Right. That's your fault. Yes, if the mountain will move, the road will move around it, and the road will move, you can move. Yes. Okay.
Hello? Hello? Oh, no, I was just saying, I just really like the quote from Shifu's book, if you can truly alter your perceptions, then you can see there's nothing to worry about. That is in the same vein as the mountain. If the mountain doesn't move, the road can. If the mountain doesn't turn, the road can turn around the mountain. And if the road can't turn, then you can turn. Is that
that's it? That's the same thing. Yeah.
So it's all. It has. Is that why there's illusions of worry and fear and these vexations?
Yeah. Well, we're the ones responsible for our delusions, our illusions, and our worry. And Shifu, once again, is talking in a pretty mundane way, in a sense, about being able to cut through those things. So, as I said, was about to say, so what I'd like to talk about is some of the other issues that came up in translating, and I think they're just kind of interesting, both for the Chinese audience and for the Americans. So, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. 所以呢到这里为止呢，我基本上把我想讲的主题内容是讲完了，就是师父的第一师父这本书第一篇讲到了工作场合怎么样处理感性与理性的问题。刚 Ramit Pusa 有一个问题，就是Harry Pusa 提到师父最后那一句话当中讲到的不要，就是看上去很担心的东西呢，其实不需要担心，因为要理解塞翁失马焉知非福，失之东隅，收之桑榆这样的道理。然后 Robert 菩萨问到，这句话是不是也是说前面师父提到的要有这种人生态度，就是山不转路会转，路不转人可以转。Harry 菩萨说是的，师父基本上的意思就是说，我们所产生的各种担忧啊、困惑呀，其实都是自己心所造的各种幻觉。师父用一种非常世俗、直截了当的方法来告诉你，其实只要你能够看破这些幻象，放下这些担心，自己的态度发生转变的话，就没有什么好担心害怕的了。 那么接下来呢，我想谈的是接下来内容，我想谈的是我在翻译这本书的过程当中，所观察到的一些东西方文化上的差异和语言学上的一些差异，我觉得很有趣的一些现象。
Okay, so some of the general remarks. In reading this work, I saw that at first it seems like Scherfel has a very idealistic view of corporations, that they are meant to help people at large and society in general. People in the United States may not have such a sanguine view of corporate contributions. However, if you read Scherfel carefully, he's talking about the potential of a given or envisaged company. He notes that there are many manipulators, corrupt companies, polluters of the environment. And once again, additionally, this book is about perceptions and attitude. It's not supposed to be a general survey of corporate activity and its effect on the world.
这里我想做一个一般的总评，就是说，似乎读这本书的人似乎有人会觉得师傅好像对于公司这一个制度啊，好像有一个比较理想化的看法，认为他们总是帮助别人，对社会是有益的。因为在美国人并没有像师傅对公司这样有一个比较乐观的看法，但是如果你仔细读师傅的书的话，你会看到他所谈的这方面的公司只是一个理想状态的公司，是一个公司它潜在的可以为社会做这样做出这样多的贡献。他在书中也提到了很多公司的操纵者啊，或者公司高层是腐败啊，公司高层有腐败，还有公司也会污染环境等等，如果这个公司制度运用的不好的话。当然这本书主要的还是谈到主要涉及的是人的观念和态度，如何在工作场合的运用，而不是说师傅对于全世界公司制度的一种观察和意见。
One interesting offshoot in dealing with this translation are Chinese cultural norms, especially in familial relations. So ingrained in Chinese culture is an understanding of the five relationships of Confucianism. And what I'm saying is that this understanding is kind of in the air in Chinese culture, and it's not in the air in Western culture, as far as I can see. So in Chinese culture, there's the relationship between the ruler and the subject, the father and the son, the husband and wife, older to younger siblings, and between friends. For Chinese, this is not just a disjointed list. This is a consistency which informs and affects all of these relationships together and separately. So it's not like Chinese don't have issues between these different categories, but there's a kind of underlying cohesiveness, I think, in Chinese society that we really don't have here in the West.
还有一点我想提到的，在翻译过程中体会到的有意思的是这本书当中深深的文化，中国文化的烙印。就比如说儒教的五伦在这本书当中有所体现，师父会提到就是君臣、父子、夫妻、长幼和朋友，这样儒家所提到的五伦之间的关系。这并不是说在这种五种关系当中对中国人而言不存在问题，而只是说这五种关系呢是一个非常影响深远的，构成了中国社会影响深远的社会关系。这一点和西方重视有些不一样的，西方的社会。
So continuing with this idea of relationships in Chinese and culture, Scherfel has in one passage in the book says, aptitudes in handling people and things is wisdom. When you are treated with kindness and things happen the way you want, that constitutes merits. Now, if there is someone who does not know how to treat others nor how to handle his own affairs to the point where he grieves his friends and gladdens his enemies and is utterly alone and friendless, you can say that is someone without wisdom. So, and then you reach the point where then father and son become enemies, husband and wife turn on one another, and there is strife among siblings. naturally in someone in this kind of situation lacks merits. So Sherpa was just showing once again in the way that constitutes some of his background, the implications and effects of things fan out through society and culture, and he shows how that works just in his discussion of wisdom and merits.
所以在书中第十章师父有一段这样提到，他说善于待人处事是智慧，受人善待事事称心如意则是福报，一个人如果不知道如何待人处事，做人做到轻痛仇快，众叛亲离的程度，可以说是极没有智慧的人。而到了父子反目，夫妻父子成仇，夫妻反目，兄弟跳墙的地步，自然也是缺少福报的人。 在这里，师父可以看到师父所谈论的，怎么样把中国的文化背景、文化渊源与智慧福报相结合的一样一个内容。
So we in the West have a very different feeling and understanding about social relations. We Americans think more in terms of personal growth. Every man or woman for him or herself. And keeping up with the Joneses. The two cultures have very different social structure. So when Sherpa talks about how a boss should care about his employee's family, this might seem strange to an American. And in today's corporate climate, I used to be a headhunter, right? Management has to be very careful about what kind of information they solicit from their employees. Today, it's even hard to get a recommendation from a former company. All they'll do normally is verify the data of someone's employment. Otherwise, they might risk a lawsuit.
所以刚刚提到的，师父处理了一块是中国文化背景跟智慧福报怎么相联系的内容。但是对我们西方人而言呢，我们美国人一般想问题、想这个社会更多的是从个人成长的角度来看的。 在我们美国的文化下，每一个人都是独立的个体，都是要为他自己去争取自己的利益。所以两种文化的社会结构，社会背景是非常不一样的。所以在这本书当中，师父是在中国的文化背景下来谈这个主题的，因为师父提到，老板应该如何的去关心他雇员的家庭、家里的情况。这个听上去对美国人而言有些奇怪，因为在今天美国的公司世界里边，公司的环境下，因为我曾经是一个猎头，所以我比较了解，在美国的公司环境下，如果管理层必须非常对雇员的信息、对雇员想要从雇员当中打探什么信息，都是必须要非常小心的。在今天这个社会，很难从前面的一个公司，你工作的公司当中得到推荐信，更不要说是去其他的内容了。因为他们所能够得到的，只有说前面的公司前雇主只会确认你曾经在这里工作过，从什么时间到什么时间。因为他们提供更多其他信息的话，有可能会遭来法律诉讼，所以他们都非常的谨慎。
Once again, there were many to pick from, but I thought this one was particularly interesting. Was about Taoism and Buddhism, and there's a very interesting understanding of Bodhisattva in this passage. Anyone who studies a lot of these topics, spiritual topics, know that Taoism and Buddhism are often compared in a variety of ways. I remember once attending a lecture by Guo Rufasher, where he explained the basic difference between them is that of non-dualism, since it was in the Tao Te Ching from the nameless that heaven and earth sprang. This Guo Rufasher sort of took that as a very fundamental difference. However, now when Sherpa was talking about Taoism in this next passage, he's talking about a very popular understanding of it, the way we in the West might throw around terms like Stoicism or Aristotelian, and we just, don't necessarily know the depth of it. So, but in this case, Sherpa was talking about a popular understanding of these terms. So, Shifu writes, once I was asked, when all is said and done, does Buddhism encourage making your way in the world with a positive outlook and yet negatively advise turning away from the world like an ascetic? So I often respond that this is a character trait of the Chinese and does not necessarily relate to Buddhist teaching. Taoism and Confucianism are schools of thought native to China. Confucian thought is about being in the world and getting ahead. So Orthodox Chinese political thought exalts Confucianism. But at times when Chinese are at their wits' end and experience unbearable suffering, they continue in survival mode and lower their expectations. Here they adopt a Taoist way of thinking and live quite freely. When we study the Tao, let's be clear about what we mean when we talk about such ideas as non-action, nature, limiting desires, and nourishing one's vital principles in order to secure long life and immortality. With nothing to look forward to in your career, you seek physical health and mental well-being and let everything else go. This is a wonderful and very natural side of Chinese culture, Shifu writes.
最后一点我想提到的是关于书中提到道教跟佛教的一个话题，因为师父在提到行菩萨道的时候，他提到了对道教的一些流行观点的解读。道教和佛教呢，如果你对宗教或者灵性学比较感兴趣的话，你会经常看到他们会被人们经常作为对比来研究。我记得我参加过果如法师的一个讲座，他提到两者最大的最基本的不同在于是无能所是否是一元论没有二元论这一点上。因为道德经上好像说到从无始以来就有天和地，然后师父在书中所提到的道教是从社会上所流行的一些观点所认可的道教角度来讲的。师父在书中提到我这里没有原文，我就大致翻译一下师父书中提到内容。他说，我经常会被问到你讲了这么多，那么佛教呢鼓励我们要有积极乐观的角度去看这个世界，但是呢好像一方面又要我们要过像苦行僧一样对世界的各种欲望和诱惑呢又要转头不去纠结。所以我经常会说这种态度其实并不完全是中国佛教的，并不是佛教的态度，这里边其实是受到了道教和儒教色彩影响。道教和儒教呢是中国的原生的两大教派，儒教更加鼓励的是一种入世学，它是鼓励大家要积极入世啊，并且要在事业上有所成就或者过得很好，要高高在上，超过别人。这也是为什么中国传统的政治一直推崇儒教的原因。但是当中国人使尽了全身的力气也没有办法争当人先，或者是觉得很痛苦的时候呢，他们又可以降低自己对人生的期望，退缩到一个就是生存的状态。就是说他们这里呢，他们就会采用道家的一种思维模式和道家追求道家的生活，就是说需要不作为啊，追求不作为，追求自然，追求禁止欲望，降低欲望，然后追求长生不老等等。当然我们这里指出师父指这里所说的道教只是大众所理解的道教，并不是真实，就是说可能道家一般人也会有所误解了。所以就是说你可以出世，你入世的可以用儒教来入世，出世的时候你就可以用道家来出世。这其实是受到中国文化影响，并不完全是佛教本身的元素。
So continuing to talk about Taoism and Buddhism, Shifu writes, Taoism allows us to find out that wealth and poverty are of no consequence. This lets us be indifferent to fame and position and power and influence. In all of these situations, you can live your life quite freely. People following this path can achieve success in their careers and retire after a number of years and nevertheless pursue a quiet and stable life, so that the second half of their lives can be relatively happy. This comes from the influence of Taoism. Buddhism differs. When you embark on the Buddhist path, you see your life as a contribution. What harm may befall you doesn't enter into your calculations. Your own success or failure are not taken into consideration. This is your life's work, doing everything you can for the benefit of others. And this is something quite positive. And I had never, I was quite struck by this passage in Sherpa's book. I'd never quite heard the Bodhisattva path enumerated in that way. And I found it quite moving.
So in the book, Sherpa mentioned, 去执着行菩萨道，道家让我们了解到，穷没有关系，没有名位，没有权势也无所谓，人还是可以活得很自在。也有人在事业有成，年岁渐长之后退了下来，反而追求一种安定的生活，让自己的后半生也能活得相当愉快，这也是受道家的影响。但是佛教并不是这样的，进入佛门就要奉献自己，不为自己的利害打算，不为自己的进退设想，凡是对众生有利的，就是自己的安身立命处，这其实是相当积极的。我在看到师父这段文字的时候很有感触，印象很深刻，因为我很少看到师父在从道家，从对比道教和佛教的差异这一点来解释菩萨道，行菩萨道，我觉得很受感动。
So working on this translation, I've had to look for the meaning behind the words, and I'm very grateful for having the opportunity. What I first thought was something that was of ordinary common sense advice now strikes me as quite profound. Many of the exhortations Sherpa expresses through the book have stayed with me, a kind of hierarchy of how you help yourself and others, noting what's most important and in a sense putting yourself last. Time and again he says that the very first thing he would investigate when he ventured to do something was whether or not he would be harming others, and that is something he would not do under any circumstance. And his insistence that there is always a road to follow, no matter what the situation is, I found this not just inspiring, but true Buddha Dharma. So there's never a point where our true nature takes a vacation. Thus, if your goal is good, there is never a reason to give up. Thank you.
所以在我非常感激有这样一个机会，非常感恩有这样一个机会能够让我从事这本书的翻译工作。因为为了翻译呢，我不仅仅要光理解字面意思，还要理解字面背后的意思，我才发现师父所提到的一些看似很简单的道理啊，其实有非常深刻的佛法原理，佛法教理在后面做支撑。师父提到，不管怎么样，我们一个基本的态度就是说不能对他人有伤害，而且不管是怎么，还有一句话我觉得印象很深刻，是说我们的佛性从来没有休假过，它一直在。所以我们的佛性也一直在。还有就是，如果你的目标是正确的，你坚信的目标是正确的，那么没有任何理由，你不应该有任何理由去放弃。好，今天我的讲座就到这里，谢谢大家。